Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Ritchie, who's the co-founder and executive director of Fair Vote. He writes, speaks, and testifies frequently on issues of voting and democratic participation. Prior to founding the center, he worked for three winning congressional campaigns in Washington State and for nonprofit organizations in Washington and the District of Columbia. He's the co-author of two books, Every Vote Equal and With Stephen Hill, Whose Vote Counts. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Ritchie.
Thanks so much. Good to be on the program.
And it looks as though efforts in Republican efforts by the legislature in Virginia to change the Electoral College or the apportionment of votes to the Electoral College in the state of Virginia have failed, with the governor showing some reluctance and a couple of Republicans who they managed to get a kind of stealth vote in during the inauguration when a key Democrat was missing. But they seem to have backed down a little bit. But that's not to say that efforts are still underway in these other key swing states of Ohio being the big one, and Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. So is that the situation?
Yeah. Well, just as a reminder, states have the right to choose how to allocate their electoral votes, and the rule that is prevalent in almost every state is that whoever wins the popular vote in that state gets all of the electoral votes. But that wasn't actually common early on. A lot of states didn't even have elections. And, so it is a rule that even though we don't really look at it much, it is something that can be changed. And it sort of can be shocking when it's done in a way that is, so clearly unfair. The thing that Republicans have been frustrated by is that there are certain states that are close, but they keep losing. Like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, they have not won since the 80s. They often get on the swing state list, but, these swing states that they always lose, they've got a lot of electoral votes. They always end up with the Democrats, and they run the state government. And so they're saying, maybe we can do something different. And so the proposal that has been getting the most attention is to change to how to allocate electoral votes by congressional district. Every state has the same number of electoral votes as districts, and then they have two more than that. They're sort of Senate electors. The Virginia proposal would actually have given those Senate electors to whoever won the most congressional districts in the state, which would have given, last year, Romney 9 out of the state's 13 electoral votes to use this plan.
Even though he lost the popular vote in the state.
Exactly. And, in fact, if that plan was put in all the six states where this dynamic exists, in each one of them, Romney would have won more electoral votes, even while losing the popular vote in each one of them. And if they all had done this, actually he would have won the election. And that's the kind of, shocking, plausible outcome that people were talking about. It's not something that can't still happen by 2016. The Virginia proposal definitely seems dead for this year. But there'll be a new governor come next year. There'll be new calculations to make as we get closer to 2016, and we sort of keep this ticking time bomb with this current electoral college system that is fraught with problems. But this is yet one more that really could actually change a whole presidential outcome. By targeting the three states that they keep losing, that's Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, they can't control who wins, but they can give a big boost to the Republican nominee, because essentially they can, by just changing to a district system or a proportional allocation of electoral vote system, they can give the Republican nominee more electoral votes than what they win by winning or losing Ohio. It's a pretty big swing of electoral votes, and it doesn't guarantee that they win, but it's a big boost toward doing so. And there's a real chance that it still may move in those states in the next year.
And of course, there are two states that have this system that the Republicans are now trying to implement in these key swing states. That's Maine and Nebraska. But I'm just curious to know how you could run a country with a deficit of, let's assume that they had put this stuff in before this last election and we would have had the same results, and yet Romney would have won the Electoral College and Obama would have been 5 million votes ahead in the popular vote. A similar situation took place back in 2004 in Ohio, where I think Bush was 1.3 million ahead in the popular vote, but Kerry, had he won Ohio, would have won the presidency. And then you go back to 2000, when Bush won, even though he was 660,000 behind in the popular vote, because of the he eventually was able to win Florida in the courts. I'm just curious to know how you can run a country, the lone superpower, with this kind of time bomb in its political
it's
DNA.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, part of it is that we tend to, you know, there's a bit of sticking the head in the sand, ostrich style or something here, where, you know, we kind of dodged a bullet. Like, you know, there was, say, one thing that could have happened last year is that it could have been a tie in the electoral vote. Of course, Obama ended up winning substantially. He, you know, won by 5 million votes. But if it had been closer, there was a real chance that they actually might have ended up in a tie. And if it's a tie, no matter what, this is in the electoral vote, even if one candidate has won more popular votes, it goes to Congress, and the House of Representatives picks the president on the basis of one state, one vote, which would mean that Delaware would get a vote, and so would California, and they would each get just one. And, you know, and whoever gets 26 state votes wins, you know, a really completely sort of irrational system. Yet they don't change that either, right? It's sort of like there's sort of like this head in the stand kind of stuff, because, well, it hasn't happened yet, and then it happens, and it's, you know, too late to change it. There is a great way to change this, which I want to make sure that this book, Every Vote Equal, which will have a new edition this year, kind of laying out the case for change and all the, you know, trying to answer all the questions that people have about the proposal, but it's to go to a national popular vote for president, which people usually assume can be would be done by abolishing the Electoral College and just, you know, having a straight-up popular vote that way. But you can also have a straight-up popular vote through action in the states. And that's what this national popular vote proposal has been creating the opportunity for. We now have 8 states in D.C. that have passed the law. And the law says we will give all of our electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote in all 50 states once the number of states that have passed this with us together have a majority in the Electoral College. So currently we have 132 electoral votes in the states that have passed this. When we get up to 270 in the next election, it'll kick in, it'll be activated, there'll be an interstate, you know, kind of treaty that has been signed into by the states, and they will guarantee that whoever gets the most votes in all 50 states is going to be the president, and all this kind of shenanigans wouldn't matter. And it's something that, you know, and we wouldn't have the wrong way outcome that you rightly laid out, you know, happened in 2000 and could have been 2004. And every vote would be equal. Like, I live in Maryland and, you know, you're in California, and all these states that are just completely written off election after election would be able to participate on an equal basis with Ohio and Florida.
Again, I'm speaking with Rob Ritchie, the co-founder and executive director of Fair Vote. He's also the co-author of 2 books, Every Vote Equal, which you just mentioned is coming out again, with this proposal to change the Electoral College. With Stephen Hill, he wrote Whose Votes Count. So clearly there's been a history of both sides, both the Democrats and the Republicans, gaming this dysfunctional electoral system we have in the states, which is controlled by the states. And that goes back to the Founding Fathers, who the first insistence on the part of the states to join, the first 13 colonies to join the Union, were that they wanted to control their own elections. And we're stuck with that system. But over the years, of course, you know, Jack Kennedy got elected because of a bunch of dead people in southern Illinois. So it's gone on both sides. But it seems much lately the Republicans, in order to overcome their demographic disadvantage with the minorities and with women, seem to be getting more and more ruthless. And the Democrats seem to be getting more and more feckless. So it's, to my mind, we could end up with a much, much, and if you combine what's been happening now with the use of the filibuster, which has become, you know, used almost for every vote in the Senate now, and now the national ruling by the D.C. District Court, which is heavily slanted to in favor of Republicans, because the Republicans have been able to put more of their judges on the courts because they filibustered Democratic nominees. And so you got the judiciary that's becoming heavily slanted with right-wing Republican judges. And you've got this kind of aggressiveness with Reince Priebus and other Republicans who want to push through this clearly rigged system that they think they might be able to get away with. So I don't know how you can shame people who have no shame, but what can we do to get to have a real level playing field in this country and stop this incredibly anti-democratic shenanigans, which is putting it politely, by the way.
Yeah, right. Well, I think all of that is correct, and you know, also the fact that both major parties do this, and you know, one way they do it is they always collude against minor parties, and you know, trying to keep independents and third parties at bay and not have them in debates, and you know, sort of ways of doing things for their own advantage and not for democracy. But I think that the excuse me, I'm going to have to cough. It seems like everyone I'm talking to is sick these days, and so am I. But the movement I think we need to have is one that sort of puts democracy first, holds our elected officials accountable when they're not, and really keeps that principle applied to a lot of different things. Like, we already can see with congressional elections a wrong way outcome, right? Last year, the Democrats won more votes in the House of Representatives, and the Republicans ended up with 33 more seats, and that's partly due to gerrymandering and you know the way the district lines were drawn. But it's really more due to the fact that just where people live these days, the Democratic vote is more concentrated, and they kind of waste votes by you know kind of winning certain districts 90-10, and that doesn't help them any more than if they won 60-40. And that's an example of something where we think we just need to open up congressional elections to a non-winner-take-all system of proportional representation. That book you mentioned, Whose Votes Counts, lays out you know, the case for proportional representation. But I think that that's an example of sort of a daring idea that is one that's a little nerve-wracking for Democratic incumbents, too, because it makes them have to run in competitive elections. But it's the right thing to do for voters, and it's actually the right thing for Democrats to do politically, because right now they're really behind the ball in House races in a way that's going to be very hard for them to win a majority anytime soon. And just, you know, start doing things that, you know, put your political lives a bit at risk, but are the right thing for voters. And I think it's ultimately, at this point in time, it's the right politics for certainly Democrats to do, and I think for any Republicans that don't want their party to just be sort of stuck in this certain, I think, minority position that leads them to a psychology of thinking that the only way they can win is cheating rather than figuring out a way to win, you know, to win the most votes again.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Robert Ritchie.
Thank you. And people should check out fairvote.org and our sort of action-oriented website, fairvoteaction.org, about things that you can do in your community to make a difference on this stuff.
Again, I thank you for joining us. Robert Ritchie is the co-founder and executive director of Fair Vote. He writes, speaks, and testifies frequently on issues of voting and democratic participation. And prior to founding the Fair Vote, he worked for three winning congressional campaigns in Washington State and for nonprofit organizations in Washington, D.C. and the District of Columbia. He's the co-author of two books, Every Vote Equal and with Stephen Hill, Whose Vote Counts. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Another headline written down in America. The guy that lived next door in 305 took the kids to the park and disappeared by 9:30. Who'll ever know how much she loved them so, that dark night alone in America. A quiet voice singing something to me, an angel song about the home of the brave in this land here of the free. One time, one night in America. Yeah.